Well, hello, everybody. And my name again is Jeffrey Davis. I'm host of Radio Entrepreneurs. And, you know, we continue to stream so many stories every day about this new economy and how everyone is really dealing with this, the stress of it. What does leadership look like in this new economy and adapting? And I've been fortunate through the last 8 months to be speaking regularly with and exposing you to Hindell Grossman, owner of Grossman & Associates. Welcome back, Hindell.
Hi, Jeffrey. Thank you. Good to be here again. Nice to see you.
Wow, what a nice background.
Isn't it lovely? It was taken by a friend of mine. Actually, an actual photo from the view of their home on top of the mountain.
Wow, where's the tennis courts?
You know, I don't know where the tennis courts are in that town. I should figure that out. They certainly aren't indoors.
Well, Hindell, you know, it's funny. During these times, I seem to be talking to more women leadership than ever before. I would say more than half my clients are females right now, both millennials and females who are owners. And, you know, they're all under such stress. And I'm just wondering, you know, what our topic is today. And it is a concern for me in my consulting.
Well, you know, there's obviously a lot going on with the pandemic, and I think it calls for very creative times. And, you know, this challenges any business owner, any person, because really just getting through every day is difficult. If you have kids at home, for example, you know, you're working remotely, you have kids at home that are learning remotely in school or going hybrid and trying to figure out from day to day whether the kids are at home or in school and how to get them there. I mean, it's just craziness. It really challenges people's ability to be flexible and organized and calm. And I think people are getting very at their wit's end about it. So as a business owner, they're, you know, same kind of challenges, particularly if they have kids. And so, you know, there's staffing challenges, there's financial challenges, there's, you know, how do you keep business going? But, you know, I there's reason to be hopeful. You know, I was in Newton Center this morning getting a coffee, and I noticed that a restaurant went out, but a new one, there's construction going on inside. And I thought, you know, how much in advance of today did that business actually negotiate the lease and start the business? I mean, there's obviously they had to hire contractors and negotiate the lease. So even probably during the pandemic time, someone was hopeful and wanted to go into Newton Center. And I thought, that's a sign of hope. And I know, too, that landlords are experiencing some more inquiries. And that although there's some, I guess, question about whether businesses should have office space, there's activity. And I think there's the reason to start thinking positively, optimistically, not just treading water. And I think good leaders have to start thinking about how they want to manage both their own business to stay afloat, make maximum use of the staff that they have if they can, cut back on overhead if they can, and just be flexible and just keep your eye on the ball. And that's hard to do if you're used to doing something the same way all the time. So a good leader, I think, sees what's really going on and doesn't live in a fantasy world.
And I still believe during this economy, building culture is the most important thing. You run an organization, and I'm sure that's some of the challenge you have, since you're probably not seeing your attorneys every day.
Yeah, I mean, we are in the office a lot more in the past few months, actually, and I think it's great. We have staff meetings with masks on, and we have a new staff person actually starting today. And I was thinking, you know, in training her, how to communicate with clients, how to communicate with opposing attorneys, what I want the image of my firm to be through her, and how I should train her to present herself through emails, the way she writes and the way she speaks to others on the phone. And that's something that's not legal training as much as it is the branding of the firm and the way I want our firm to be represented to the public. And that's just as important to me, you know, that we be respectful to others and, you know, be responsive in that.
I think, you know, a lot of my seminars on selling and service and clients, I've been stressing emotional intelligence during these times, the ability to really have people feel that you genuinely care about them and want to hear from them and what's going on for them. Yeah. Just pushing stuff out the door and pushing ideas and products out the door, that's all about you. And that's not giving the right message today. So I think what you're doing in terms of focusing on developing her communication skills is critical for your business.
It is critical for keeping clients happy. And for also, I don't know what her level of emotional intelligence is yet. So I really need to monitor that. I mean, I liked her, obviously. I think she has skills and she was personable, but you don't really know anyone until you work with them or live with them potentially, you know? So it's going to be a learning.
I have a client, and it's a female client, and I think she's found the formula for hiring, because she, I think more than anything else, focuses on hiring people during the screening stage of high emotional intelligence. Uh-huh. Her assumption is that if they're people of high emotional intelligence, good values, hard work, they're always going to learn how to do the job right, and they're going to be a better team member, less selfish, more about the team, more pulling together. And she's built an extraordinarily successful organization on that kind of hiring philosophy, which I've met from other people.
That seems like a great standard, but how does she test emotional intelligence?
Well, it's again something I do a lot, and nobody's perfect at hiring. I want to be that clear, that even the best hirers make mistakes. But I think, for me, and I was lucky, I was trained by a world famous family therapist, and he used to talk to me about peeling the onion back. Uh-huh. And people who know me will tell you, they get together and they tell stories about when I was interviewed by Jeffrey. So even meeting Nathan was kind of bizarre, who's on my producer, and my other producer, Chris. Yeah. I spent a year and a half watching Chris, in real life. And so, what I try to do is peel back the onion. I don't look at the resume very hard, because everybody has a professional who writes your resume. I don't do what I would call traditional questions, because everybody's been coached for traditional questions. And so I without going into it in depth here, I sort of really peel back the onion and get to know the person. And I do really a life process questionnaire. And I see how they've dealt with stress, anxiety in the past, if they've had adversity. And I really get to deep questions. And everybody always says to me during interviews, I'll say, what do you think of the interview? They go, I've never had an interview like this before.
Oh, yeah.
Questions is, why do you think I'm asking you these questions? Uh-huh. So I'm looking for insight into me. Plus, uh-huh. I ask them to describe me during the interview.
Really? Describe you, huh?
Yeah. Well, I say, okay, you've now been on, you now talked to me for 15, 20 minutes. After this interview, if you had to go to your whomever, best friend, and describe me, can you try to describe me? So I get to see how honest they are, insightful uh-huh. they are.
Well, they probably want to be very careful how they answer that question, how they describe you.
You'd be surprised what people say, but I also say, if I were interviewing people for your company, I go, well, you met Hindell. Pretend I own the company now, and Hindell interviewed to interview for us. Tell me your assessment of Hindell. That throws people off guard.
Oh, I bet it does. So I bet in your business as a management consultant, it's important to know to ask people in an organization what their opinion is of other people.
Yes, but it's an important part of my work with leaders that I give them advice on people in their organization. I do a lot of assessments. We do a lot of assessments.
Yeah.
And we have to do a lot of predictive assessments of people. Both in interviews and in current staff. And is it worth their investment? Not everybody should be coached. Not everybody should be invested in. And you don't want to, I used to say to a company a long time ago, don't give me people just before you fire them.
It's too late. Yeah.
Don't give me the reclamation project. Give me someone who has a future, and then I'll tell you if it's worthwhile to invest in them.
Uh-huh.
So.
Well, that's an important function, because we do invest a lot of time in our staff, and we train them. We're hopeful that they accurately represent the branding of our firm, the identity of the firm, and both handle the work well as well, of course. But it's more than that. It's the emotional intelligence as well as the quality.
I don't want to date myself, because at this point in my life, dating myself is not what I want to do. But I worked for a Fortune 100 company earlier in my career, and they told me that they were going to spend at least $250,000 on my training, that the investment in me was essential to their business success.
I see.
And that's, I don't see that at all anymore.
Really? You don't see that kind of commitment from an employer to training?
No. But I mean, yes, some people have hired me to make that kind of commitment, maybe not that much money, but yes, people do that. It's not standard, but this was a corporate philosophy. They did this with everybody. And because their attitude was that they were number one, perfection was the only goal, and the failure was never an option.
So how did it work? Did it work well?
Yes, but I was going back to my family business. So my goal was to get trained and leave. But yes, I think I produced a lot of revenue for the firm. Mm-hmm. I produced at the level they wanted me to. Mm-hmm. For me personally, it's been a lifelong value. Mm-hmm. And I value it more than any level of my education.
All right, so they dedicated a lot of training to you then. What did you learn from it?
What did I learn?
Yeah, it was early in your career, you said. So what did you learn then that you still believe was valuable now?
That even if I'm the most charming person in the world, half the people I meet, I'm not their type of person.
Mm. That's interesting.
And so even if I have the right business, product, service, whatever it is, half the people aren't going to purchase it, even if it's the right thing for them. Ah. But my ability to read the audience and adapt to the audience and give them what they actually really want and understand what they really want was really what they taught me. How to really, well, I'll simplify it, and I'm overly simplified. How to really listen at a deeper level to people. Mm-hmm. How to really understand at a deeper level. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. And yes, I might have had some basic skills, but that's not who I was before they trained me. I was mm-hmm. more of what you'd see a show and tell person. Mm-hmm. And that's not what they want. I mean, they didn't worry about my ability to show and tell. They needed my ability to get very deep in understanding and listening.
So how do you train someone to listen?
Don't talk. Ask the right questions. Always, like you've done depositions.
Yeah.
And I'm sure in depositions, the best attorneys know how to listen.
Yeah.
Because people are giving them little crumbs. And they also know what are the right questions. And generally speaking, I would say in a deposition, the person tells you what question to ask next.
I know. I actually enjoy depositions. I'm not mean during them, but I do like the opportunity to ask follow-up questions because I hear a little nugget in an answer and I'll say, well, what do you mean by that? And then I find out they meant something different than what I initially thought they meant, which my instinct told me there was something there. And I can track it, I can follow it up.
Well, I don't want to say you're mean because that's just a mean comment. Yeah, I'm listening. But I wouldn't want to be in a fight with you, and I wouldn't want to be in a deposition with you. Better a lover than a fighter.
I take a good deposition. I kind of get to the bottom of the story. Yeah.
If I thought you were deposing me, I would feel at a definite vulnerable state.
I do it nicely.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I do it nicely.
I'm sure you do.
I just ask a lot of questions.
Again, leadership during this time, very critical. Hindell, if someone's looking for you, how do they find you?
My email's easy, hindell@grossmanltd.com. And I'm in Newton. You can look under Grossman and Associates, my law firm on Wells Avenue in Newton. And phone number is 617-969-0069. With a name Hindell. Like Hindell, they can find me. Thank you, Jeffrey.
I look forward to talking to you again and continuing on this topic.
Thank you so
much. Remind everybody, this is Radio Entrepreneurs.